Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. Along with Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel, here to talk a little college baseball as we do every Monday on BaseballAmerica.com or on iTunes. Aaron, I think you had a little bit of a down week as far as watching college baseball games, correct? Took a little breather this week, if I'm not mistaken.
I didn't go to any games, but I was able to watch two games of the Florida South Carolina series on TV, and watched Matt Perk start and Jed Bradley start on Saturday. So worked out okay. The home base here in Laguna Beach was hopping with college baseball.
It sounds like it. No, obviously, it's not like you ignored it. We had awful weather here in North Cackalack. Our own Jim Schoenard went out to see Clemson and NC State this weekend. I was intending to get out there to see those guys, and the weather was bad, so I did not go because I'm old. Yeah, I'm not going to go out and sit in the cold. We haven't had sleet here this morning, Fitzy. So I'll bring this point up apropos of nothing in our top 25, but it is difficult. I'm one of the top 25 fans of college baseball in the country who does not live in a college town. You know, I'm one of the 25 most interested people who did not work in college baseball. In the whole country.
Yeah.
And it's tough in March with the college basketball tournament, if you like college basketball too, if you like college sports, and if the weather is not good, to really pay attention to college baseball. It is difficult. I don't think people realize the uphill battle for this sport. And I'm heartened, Aaron, by all the good attendance numbers that I see around the country. I mean, like Rice, South Carolina. Yeah. How did Florida draw this weekend?
Florida drew well. I think that was their largest attendance ever for a three-game weekend series, if I'm not mistaken.
I mean, LSU has set, what, two weekend records at the new box already this year, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah, at least.
I mean, it's crazy. College baseball is fighting such an uphill battle for attention for the hearts and minds of fans. The NCAA gives no attention to college baseball except for in June. And yet the sport perseveres, continues to grow. It's just so impressive. I think it speaks to the quality of the game, and it's doing that this year. And it's a completely different brand of baseball than it has been in a lot of ways,
yeah.
In a lot of places. Not necessarily everywhere. That's another subject for maybe another day. But Aaron, obviously, all eyes, even your eyes, focused on that number one versus number four, South Carolina versus Florida. And they almost just switched places in our top 25 rankings. The Gamecocks with an impressive series win in Gainesville. First series loss in a long time for the Gators. They dropped to number four. And Aaron, we had a pretty stout debate for the spots 1, 2, and 3 between Vanderbilt and Virginia and South Carolina. And at the risk of I'll let you decide how much you want to go behind the curtain. You can either tell how did it come out? How did it shake out? And how did you see that we came to our conclusion?
Well, coming into the meeting, I had tentatively thrown my support behind South Carolina, and I thought it was a very interesting debate, and I don't think it was really a wrong answer. I think you've got three teams worthy of being number one. They all have very similar resumes. They all have really two kind of signature series wins. I thought South Carolina had the best series win, obviously, going to Florida and taking 2 out of 3, and that's just really hard. I still believe Florida is the best team in the country, so I think it says a lot of South Carolina that it in there and into Gainesville and won two games. But in the end, Vanderbilt and Virginia actually have fewer losses overall. I mean, I think that might have been one part of the separator is, you know, South Carolina has losses to Furman and Cal State Bakersfield on their resume. The other thing I think that is worth noting is that South Carolina is doing this without really a settled pitching staff. And on the one hand, you give South Carolina credit for that. It speaks well of their bullpen and their ability to grind out at bats offensively and do other things and beat two different ways. But I feel a little bit better about the team that has Sonny Gray and Grayson Garvin and Taylor Hill than I do about the team that has Michael Roth and, you know, Forrest Kumis spot starred and maybe two innings out of Brian Harper. I mean, it's good for South Carolina. That's even more impressive that they were able to win a series at Florida without, you know, a really rock-solid weekend rotation. But I feel, like I said, a little bit better about the number one team that has a rock-solid weekend rotation.
Yeah, that summarizes it pretty well for me. I just felt that what South Carolina did this weekend was probably as impressive as anything any team has done all year. Maybe Florida going to LSU and sweeping them as resoundingly as they did the weekend after LSU had swept Cal State Fullerton. Maybe that was the loudest series of the year previously. But the way that Florida had been playing, for South Carolina to go in there, and for a freshman like Kumas, even though that's a game they lost, to go in there and not just pitch well, but to give South Carolina six innings. Him giving them six innings gave them a chance to Johnny Holstaff it on Sunday. And, in my opinion, it's really saved the bullpen. That was as crucial as anything. And we talked about in the preseason, Aaron, we talked about Matt Price and the debate. And you've talked to Matt Price about this, about the debate about moving him into the weekend rotation. Why did the Gamecocks choose Kumas in the weekend rotation over Price? And talk a little bit about just those two power arms and just how well Kumas threw and maybe the long-term implications of that for South Carolina, because it seems like he potentially gives them a power right-handed arm to go into what had been a very left-hand heavy weekend rotation.
I kind of see that as a potential for at least down the road. I'm still not sure South Carolina is ready to make Forrest Kumas their regular Saturday starter because, you know, he's not a finished product yet. I mean, watching that game, it was clear that there's still some command things that he's ironing out. He's not terribly efficient, you know, and you need to be more efficient to work deeper into the game. This was his longest outing by far in his career, but of course he had been in the bullpen. But, I think South Carolina has a nice luxury with their bullpen. They could afford to move a good power arm like Kumas into a starting role, and even Brian Harper. But I do think that Price is so valuable in the bullpen, even though he took the loss on Saturday. He pitched well on Saturday, just made one bad pitch to Cam Washington, and came back on Sunday and got the win in relief. So I just think he's such a weapon in the bullpen, as he showed in Omaha last year, and those guys are really important in college baseball and gives you a chance to impact multiple games over the course of a weekend. So, I suspect you'll see Steven Neff back maybe next week and maybe back in the rotation. And then I think they're still trying to figure out how that whole thing's going to shake out. But I think in the end, as far as the rankings are concerned, as impressive as South Carolina's weekend was it enough to jump over Vanderbilt and Virginia, which also had fine weeks and, you know, have similar bodies of work? I guess that's the thing, is, you know, those teams have taken care of business too.
Yeah, that's pretty much that was the way it shook out for us. There's nothing negative about South Carolina. It's usually you move up more than one spot when you win a series on the road against the number one team. But Vanderbilt and Virginia are that good. And there was some sentiment, more sentiment than I thought there would be actually in the meeting, Aaron, for UVA. We were missing one of our usual, two of our usual, stalwarts in the meeting, J.J. Cooper and Josh Leventhal, for various reasons, not in the meeting today. I was a little bit surprised with the guys that came to the office that we had some Virginia support. I didn't even think about it with Towson and Maryland as the teams they beat. It just didn't cross my mind. But 24-2 is 24-2. I mean, Virginia is just rolling right along. Like you said, Vanderbilt, their one loss on the week is a Sonny Gray start where he deals. I mean, he did have four walks. But those two teams are pretty fair teams, too. I think you made a tremendous point about Vanderbilt that, we're not even talking about Jack Armstrong. Votes-wise, he almost made our All-America team preseason, and that guy has hardly pitched for Vanderbilt, and that just tells you a little bit about their pitching depth. Any concerns for you at all about them offensively, considering they scored only seven runs in the weekend series at Arkansas, and Arkansas's pitching had been struggling previously?
That's the kind of team I think Vanderbilt is. They're going to be a pitching and defense team that's going to manufacture runs and, an occasional power display maybe from an Esposito or a Westlake, but they're not going to be an offensive juggernaut. I mean, I think they're going to be kind of similar to for the most part, similar to Virginia and Florida and Texas and Texas A&M. I mean, all these teams that are in our top 10 are constructed similarly.
Yeah, they're all pitching defense and let's hope we scratch some runs out teams, basically.
Yeah, and Vanderbilt and Florida, I think, have better offensive personnel than Texas and Texas A&M. I think those teams are better offensively. But there's certainly not going to be, world beaters offensively either. Generally.
Yeah, no, I agree. No, that's a good way to put it. And just speaking of Arkansas, Baum Stadium is one of the show places in college baseball. It's definitely on my wish I could go there list. But 7,900 Friday and Saturday night, each night, and 6,600 on Sunday. So what is that? Eight and it's like 2,250 fans over the course of the weekend for Vanderbilt and Arkansas. I mean, SEC baseball is just at such another level when you factor in the talent, competitiveness, and then the fan interest, the atmosphere.
Yeah.
I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, those fans are to be commended, and those schools are to be commended for the attention and interest they have and they put in college baseball. And, you know, three of our top four teams remain SEC clubs, and, you know, all three of those are national championship contenders. Here we are 5 weeks in here, and we're basically a third of the way through the season, through the regular season. You're counting 14 regular season weeks and then that conference tournament week. We're basically a third of the way through the season, and we thought that three of the top seven teams coming in were SEC clubs. I think, you know, nothing has changed our minds about Florida, how good Florida, Vanderbilt, and South Carolina. Kind of the biggest interloper in our top ten, really, I guess our two biggest interlopers from the start of the year to now, are the Texas A&M Aggies and then Fresno State. The Aggies, you know, with another 4-0 week this week, we jumped them quite a bit last weekend, kind of crossed our fingers to make sure they made us look good, and they go in the sweep a series. They're pitching three runs allowed all weekend. You know, John Stilson continues to make that transition into the weekend rotation. And then Fresno State probably played the most notable single game of the weekend, Aaron, just because they went 22 innings with San Diego. Let's talk a little bit about the Bulldogs. Obviously, 2008 national champions. Obviously, the bats are different than they were in 2008. But this team has some of those holdovers. So they have a really nice mix of those experienced guys and some guy, you know, some of the Danny Munoz and some of the other guys, Jordan Rivera, still around from that 2008 club, along with some of the guys who kind of mixed in since then. You know, talk a little bit about is this Fresno State team? Obviously, we have them nine. What makes Fresno State a national championship contender this year?
Well, they're constructed fairly similarly to the way they were built in 2009. You know, it's a very veteran team. A lot of seniors in the lineup and upperclassmen guys. You know, they've got some thumps there. Now that Brennan Gowans had been starting to hit until he went 1-for-11 Saturday. Which I imagine hurt the average a little bit, but you know, he and Dusty Robinson are key guys there in the middle, and they've been producing along with Rivera. You know, and on the mound, I mean, I think this is a deeper pitching staff than they've had since 2009. It's you know, Greg Gonzalez has given them a senior at the top of the rotation who's pitched very well just about every week. And then I thought it was notable that Josh Poitras moved into the rotation on Sunday and pitched well. That's a guy that boy, we've been waiting on for 3 years. I mean, since he got there, he was really the centerpiece of that recruiting class.
Right.
That's now the junior class that has been a very good class for them. But Poitras hadn't really performed up to expectations. So interesting to see if they can get him going. I think they'll be even more dangerous.
I mean, wasn't he, what, an unsigned 10th-round pick at a high school? I mean, he was a big deal.
Sounds something like that, yeah.
And then they have the, you know, come up with Charlie Robertson in the bullpen. Sacramento kid. Obviously, Sacramento's had some produced some great players over the years. It's like kind of a neat baseball hotbed. Charlie is a brother of Tyler Robertson, left-hander in the twin system, who was once a much better prospect. His father is a big-time scout, Jay Robertson. I believe still works for the Rangers organization. So he's from a baseball family. You know, he's not left-handed like his big brother, like Tyler. But he's just having an unbelievable year out of their bullpen with 8 saves and 9 appearances. And, you know, he comes from a baseball family. It wouldn't shock me to see Charlie Robertson keep that up. And it seems like they're, you know, defensively, it seems like Fresno's a little bit more consistent club than they maybe the last couple of years, especially since they lost Tommy Mendoza, who's been at times spectacular for them at third base. Now, Danny Munoz playing over at third base, which is a little bit jarring to see. He was their freshman and their shortstop as a freshman on their national title team. Seems like they've got a pretty veteran and solid infield. So this is a team that doesn't look like it has a whole lot of glaring weaknesses, Aaron.
Yeah, and you know, they've played a pretty good schedule. They haven't played any top 25 teams yet, but they've got I think 2 wins early on in the year against Oregon State. They swept the Washington State team that, you know, was in a regional last year and had some aspirations to you know, be a top 25 team this year. I mean, I think there was a lot of support for Washington State as that kind of club. But, you know, they They played a bunch of named teams. They won a series at Nebraska. They swept Pepperdine. I mean, it's been a solid schedule. It's just, you know, hasn't been an elite schedule. But they're 18-2, so they've certainly done what they needed to do.
Yeah, the only losses, I believe, at Nebraska and to Cal Poly. So it's been an impressive year. It's the Baseball America podcast with John and Aaron. Aaron, sticking with the West Coast for a minute, Stanford and Fullerton in our rankings, 11 and 12 this week, Cal at 13. Georgia Tech follows them at 14. We really wrestled with the Yellow Jackets as we have the last couple of weeks trying to figure out how much to move Georgia Tech up. They're 9-0 in the ACC. They go down and sweep Miami. But I guess we felt this week we really could not move them ahead of Stanford, Fullerton, and California, all of which had pretty significant weeks. Let's talk about the Cardinal for a second. 15-day layoff. I mean, they always have a week off for exams in the middle of the year. You know, usually like a 9-10-day layoff. You throw in 5 extra days because they missed the in the Michigan series last weekend due to rain. And yet Stanford's hitting. You know, tough to rank a 10-16 that high, but this was their easiest week of the year considering that they didn't play on the road against top 25 teams. And March 25 winds up being their home opener, basically, right, against Long Beach State?
For a weekend game, yeah. I think they played a midweek game at home. But
okay.
Yeah, against Cal and Santa Clara, they had a couple of midweeks. But yeah, they played UC Davis and Santa Clara this week at home also, beat those two teams. And then Long Beach took 2 out of 3. So, I mean, it's a solid 4-1 week, and I was curious to see how they'd respond after a 15-day layoff. And it looks like they responded well. I thought it was very important that Brian Regira has gotten going a little bit. You know, one of those talented freshmen. We've talked so much about their young players. Hit for the cycle on Tuesday, I believe, against Santa Clara, going 5 for 5, and then had 3 more hits in one of those Long Beach games. And seems like he's swinging a little bit, which is a nice development for them. You know, they found answers in the bullpen with Chris Reed, the junior left-hander, who's you know, really good prospect. They like him in that closer role, and you know, and he made 3 appearances this weekend and pitched well, struck out 8 over 5 2/3 or so. You know, that's a big development. I feel like their pitching staff is settling into place. They've got their roles now. They're still 10-6, but you could almost see them going on a run here. They've got San Jose State, and then they're at Southern Cal. It's kind of a winnable series. And then they've got 2 home series against Oregon State and UCLA. So it should be a fascinating stretch for Stanford.
And they stretched out A.J. Venegas, their touted freshman, 4-plus innings this weekend. With the emergence of Reed in their bullpen, the fact they have some other veterans back there like Sam Brink, again, Snodgrass, these aren't guys with big-time arms, but guys they trust. Could you see Venegas moving into their weekend?
A big-time arm, too.
Okay, he is a big-time arm. Could you see them moving Venegas into the weekend rotation, Aaron? Is that a possibility, maybe behind Appel?
I wouldn't think so at this point. You know, I think Venegas is he's still kind of finding his way a little bit. But, I mean, they've got Jordan Preece still. You know, and I think generally they've been happy with Dean McArdle. He didn't pitch well on Sunday, but you know, well, I guess that's something to monitor. I do think Venegas is good enough to be in the rotation, but you know, he's been a little bit up and down this year also, so that's something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, just Dean McArdle just sounds like you know, like a Animal House joke. You know, it doesn't sound like really his name. I mean, obviously it is, but it is, when you said Dean McArdle, it made me think of like old school or something like that. Cal State Fullerton goes on the road, Aaron. Any significance to their suspension of 8 players besides the fact that they suspended 8 players, 4 or 5 of whom were pretty significant players, and went on the road and swept Hawaii, which is a pretty good team?
Significance? I mean, no. I mean, you know, I think you hit it on the head. To me, it's really impressive that they played 6 games this week. And the last 4 of them were on the road, you know, without a bunch of key players, and they still swept that series. I mean, you know, you talk to Dave Serrano, he'll tell you this might be the best pitching staff he's ever had. And I think that the depth really came through this weekend. You know, you go 4-0 out there with a bunch of guys suspended. I mean, it's not easy. You know, and boy, Anthony Trajano, what a season that guy's having. He's kind of an unheralded guy, just a little scrapper. I'm in that classic Cal State Fullerton mold. You know, he's not quite as little as David Bocconi, but he's that kind of player, you know, a Bocconi or a Red Turner, a grinder type. But without Richie Pedroza this weekend, they put Trajano at shortstop, and he just keeps on plugging along and keeps on hitting. So You know, but this team is it's all about pitching with Fullerton, and they pitched very well this weekend. And Noe Ramirez and Tyler Pill and those guys, Dylan Floro pitched well, and then they got a nice spot start from David Hurlbut on Sunday. So, you know, it's an impressive week.
And just true to their, you know, you mentioned Trahana. I'm like, I don't know much about that guy. But you look him up, and he's taken a dose 8 times. He leads the team in hit-by-pitches. I mean, that's just, like you said, that's a classic Jason Karofsky. There's a long line of undersized Fullerton guys who learned to do those little things that help the Titans win games. So Fullerton, Stanford, you know, again, Georgia Tech, they're at 14. They could have a week where they go like 3-2, and if it's the right 3-2, that might be the week that they jump up. Just depends a lot on what the teams around them. Pretty impressive to see them go to and just and sweep Miami. Although the Hurricanes are not the Hurricanes that we you know, that you think of. Mark Pope finally touched up a little bit this weekend, but Miami hitting like .228 as a team. Pretty impressive for Georgia Tech. But really, most of those teams after Tech, basically, Aaron, there's TCU, North Carolina at 16. After that, the poll got a little bit ugly. We had a hard time.
Yeah.
I probably would have been best to cut the poll off at 16.
Yeah, this week was, boy, it was not pretty, like you said. I mean, part of it is because the SEC West is, as we thought it was coming into the year, it's wide open, you know. And after LSU swept Fullerton, I think we started to think, okay, maybe LSU is the real team to beat. And we had kind of had LSU penciled in as a slight favorite coming into the year. But I thought Auburn and Ole Miss and Arkansas were right there with it, really. And it turns out that, you know, maybe Alabama and Mississippi State are also in the mix. I mean, Alabama this weekend sweeps Kentucky. They're finding themselves in the back of the rankings at number 25. You know, they're 5-1. I think they have the best record in the SEC. And then, you know, Mississippi State going on the road and sweeping Auburn, which had been ranked last week. So we knocked Auburn out, and we debated ranking Mississippi State, but their resume was a little bit short. It was messy at the back. You know, we had 4 spots. We bumped Auburn, Rice, Clemson, and Tulane. You know, Stetson, Troy, Southern Miss, and Alabama were the teams we ended up bringing in. But you know, all of those teams have holes in their resumes. All the other teams have holes in their resumes. You just do the best you can.
Yeah, that really was that was pretty much the mode of this week's rankings. There's no doubt about that. Let's talk a little bit about some of those SEC West teams there, and just Alabama, I just think, is one of the most unusual teams in the country. Their best players are 5'6 and 5'7. I would have loved to have seen Peanut Kilcrease at 5'6 pitching against and beating Alex Meyer at 6'9. Like, if this had been 100 years ago or 90 years ago where you, like, left your glove on the field, and I actually went and spoke in Fayetteville, North Carolina, at the Summer College League team of the Fayetteville Swamp Dogs this weekend. And you talk about who does not belong and why. I was on a panel with 3 Negro Leaguers. It was me and 3 ex-Negro League players. So I really was completely unworthy of being on this panel. But it was a joy to meet those gentlemen, Sam Allen, Carl Long, and then I cannot remember the 3rd gentleman's name. I didn't meet him until right after the panel was over. But, you know, you're talking about that. Those guys always – one of the stories I kept talking about was leaving their glove on the field. And I mean, I don't think Nathan Kilcrease in the old days could have fit his. You know, how could his hand and Alex Meyer's hand have fit in the same glove? You know, I mean,
right.
Like, I can't even comprehend those guys being, you know, playing the same position, doing the same things they do, and yet Peanut is arguably the better college pitcher, even though obviously he's not going to be a first-round pick like Alex Meyer might be. Yeah, but Alabama.
There's no arguably about it. I think Nathan Kilcrease is a better college pitcher than Alex Meyer. I mean, he wins. He throws strikes. I mean, look at his numbers this year. He's got 41 strikeouts and 6 walks in 40 innings. I mean, that's so important in college baseball. You got to throw strikes, and that's been Alex Meyer's bugaboo over the course of his career.
Bugaboo. Always fun to say bugaboo. But I mean, and then they're the best offensive player, last year's All-American, Taylor Dugas. I mean, just an on-base machine. Not a guy who's really going to be impacted necessarily by the bats. He's, you know, 487 on base this year. You'd like them to steal bases a little bit more. But that team's, you know, replaced a lot of their guys. You know, had a lot of turnover last year, but they kept 2 of the most important guys to me were those 2 guys. Adam Morgan's back in their weekend rotation. And they've done a nice job, it seems like, of kind of piecing things back together at Alabama. Who do you think maybe has a little bit more staying power? Alabama, where you've got Mitch Gaspard, I believe, in his 3rd year as head coach or 2nd year? 2nd year?
I think it's his second year.
And then you have John Cohen also, what, in his second or third year in rebuilding Mississippi State, correct?
Yeah, he's in his third year. I think that's how it breaks down. But, yeah, it's tough. That division is, like I said, I think it's so wide open. I don't know that any of those teams, except for maybe LSU, which is in last place.
Right.
I don't know that any of those teams are necessarily top 25 teams going forward. But, I look at Alabama, and I'm not blown away. But you give those guys credit for having new pieces step forward this year. I mean, Brock Bennett and Jared Reeves are having nice little years for them. I don't know. I mean, I don't know how good this Alabama team really is yet. I think it remains to be seen. They haven't really played the top teams in the conference yet. They did win a series at Ole Miss last week, which I thought was impressive. And sweeping Kentucky. I mean, anytime you sweep in conference, it's a statement. It's not easy. They've done a good job. They're playing well right now. They're hot. But I'm not convinced even that they're necessarily a regionals team. I mean, in that league, who knows? There's a long, long way to go. But for now, they're number 25, so we'll see how long it holds up. But Mississippi State, I think, is fascinating, because they've gone through, a lot of lumps the last couple of years, and they've liked their recruiting classes quite a bit the last 2 years, and I think they're starting to see the fruits of their labors on the recruiting trail. And they're very athletic. They built that team around pitching and defense. That's their model, and they've got a lot of two-way guys. They've got a lot of speed on that team. It's an exciting team. I just don't know how well the offense is going to hold up, and I don't know how well the pitching is going to hold up. But so far, so good.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. I think that Mississippi State, Alabama has a better resume, and that's why they're ranked right now. And they have two, we already talked about difference maker college players. I kind of like Mississippi State's chances of having some staying power, though. I think the Left Field Lounge guys are going to be a little excited this year. This might be the year that Mississippi State gets back. I mean, you got an exciting two-way freshman, Daryl Norris, who's contributed out of the bullpen and at the plate. You got Chris Stratton, a sophomore, got a lot of experience last year, trial by fire. He's a guy we like out of high school, arm strength guy like you wrote about in the recruiting class a couple years ago. He seems to be stepping forward into that, weekend number one type role. Devin Jones is a solid college pitcher. They got some guys. It wouldn't shock me if Mississippi State with a team out of those two that had a little bit more staying power. But I'm with you. The jury to me is still out on the entire SEC West.
And you mentioned Devin Jones, and I think that's really a key guy for Mississippi State because he's a prospect, and he looks the part, and he throws hard. He can run up there to 94 or so. But
right.
He hasn't quite put it all together yet in college. And, I spoke with John Cohen yesterday. We'll have more on this in Three Strikes. But,
oh, great.
He said Devin Jones he'll flash it to you, but right now he hasn't quite been consistent yet, and that's something that they need because they kind of hoped he'd be their Friday guy. I think they might wind up putting Chris Stratton as their Friday guy, although they like having him on Saturdays. They're one of those programs that really believes in the importance of the Saturday games, but I don't know. I mean, it's he's a key piece. That's the point, he needs to throw strikes and be more consistent, and hopefully it clicks for him this year instead of in pro ball, which is something that Mississippi State's been a little bit afraid of.
Right. That's a great point. I just remember writing him up out of high school, and they have athleticism. I like their speed. That's going to play well in this current college baseball era. We should wrap up. Go ahead.
Sorry, John. One final thought. Your man Hunter Renfro, all-time John Manuel cheeseball. Apparently he's been 95, 97 every time he's thrown a ball off the mound this year. So
I did not even want to ask. He was in my back pocket. I wasn't going to mention Hunter, but since you did, 90 RA, I'm a little disappointed there. Hunter, throw strikes. I'm going to give you my quick 2 second Wayne Graham pep talk. Throw strikes. I love Hunter Renfro. Did I get any Tommy points for that? I mean,
yeah, there you go, +2.
That was a stretch to give you a little Tommy Heinsohn impersonation on the college podcast. That was very random, Aaron. Then we also ranked 1/3. It seemed like of Conference USA. Not quite, obviously, because Troy's not even in Conference USA. But Stetson, Troy, Southern Miss, welcome to the party. We did not rank East Carolina. We dropped Tulane. Clemson drops out. The Tigers about as banged up as any team in the country. They go 3-2 this week, but they fall out from 19 because they're the only team that was even considered for our rankings that's lost three weekend series this year. Let's talk about the teams that we did rank. Stetson, the Hatters really have had a very nice season. You've talked to Pete Dunne this year. They win a midweek game against Florida State. They've got a series sweep at Georgia, or at home, I should say, against Georgia from the SEC. They swept Mercer, which is a good veteran team out of the Atlantic Sun and their own league. And then this weekend they win 2 out of 3 against East Tennessee State, which really pounded their pitching on Sunday with Paul Hoylman, the possible All-American. The guy's had a great career there at East Tennessee State. What is it about Stetson and Troy? Southern Miss obviously won that series against Tulane. I think that's a little bit obvious why they got ranked. Troy won the series against Southern Miss. Tell our listeners a little bit about Stetson and Troy, kind of these off-the-radar, maybe a little bit, teams that we wound up ranking this week.
Yeah, Stetson, I think, is interesting because, like you said, their resume is pretty good. Both these teams are, 19-4, 20-5. I mean, they've played pretty consistently. And, Stetson is to me, is a team that it's got solid pitching. It's not overpowering pitching, but it's guys who throw strikes and are good college pitchers, Kurt Schluter and Lindsey Coggle and, these kinds of guys. But, Ben Carhart is a key for them also. I mean, he started to hit for some power along with Nick Rickles. They're great catcher over there. He's kind of the glue guy, I think. I mean, it's a solid all-around college team is what it is. They've got a little bit of speed. Jeff Simpson stealing some bases for them. Spencer Theisen can run. It's just one of those quality college teams that doesn't leap out at you in any way, but they've got a lot of nice little parts and they're experienced.
I'm definitely lamenting the fact that I missed my chance to see the Hatters last weekend. They were at Campbell's. They were in our neck of the woods. That's usually when we hear BA get a chance to go out and see Atlantic Sun teams when they come to Campbell. And I feel bad that I missed my chance. Like you said, the thing I like best about those guys is they do hit a little bit. They've shown a little thump, and they're a balanced ball club. And then Troy, again, it's a well-coached team, Aaron, that just every year it seems like they're in that mix. They've got the X factor this year in Jimmy Hodgkin, the left-hander, the freshman, who was a highly recruited player. But that's not really what Troy's about. I mean, they're just about they hit, they feel it. It seems like they're just a fundamentally sound, talented college baseball team that doesn't really have one thing they lean on more than anything else. It just seems like they're pretty good in all phases of the game.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I mean, they're a really good defensive team. They're fielding 983. Adam Bryant, their star shortstop over there, hasn't put up the loud numbers that he put up last year, but he's hitting. He's having a very solid year. He's got 29 RBIs. He continues to be that run producer guy for them. Tyler Ray on Fridays, it's a fun rotation. It's just, again,
he's been
a strike
like
thrower. Yep. I mean, he just pounds the strike zone, and he's 5-0. He's got a sub-2 ERA. And only 4 walks and 41 innings. So, you got to throw strikes. You got to throw strikes more than ever now. And that's what they're doing.
Throw strikes. Aaron, we left Oregon State and UCLA in the rankings at the back. Any comment on the Bruins? I think they're one of our hot-button teams. I think they're the team that Baseball America likes that our fans love to hate, it seems. Go ahead.
I think everybody likes UCLA, though, this year. I don't think we're alone on them. In fact, we're probably lower on them than most of the other rankings are. But they're 11-8. Their record isn't great. We understand that. But, they've got insane pitching. And maybe their bats are starting to come. They did score 8 runs in 2 separate games this week. I mean, that's an outburst for those guys.
That is.
Who knows? I mean, we'll see what with UCLA, but they did go 3-2 this week. They won a series against USC. They split 2 games at Cal Poly. We'll see what they can do. I mean, Gerrit Cole and Trevor Bauer and Adam Plutko give them a chance to win every series, and Bauer was transcendent, I think, on Saturday, it sounds like, a one-hitter, 14 strikeouts. But
Aaron,
they're going to need to stop swinging the bats.
If you have one game to win in college baseball, who do you have pitched that game? You know what my answer is.
Mm-mm.
Trevor Bauer. I mean, if I have one game to win, I take Trevor Bauer. That guy is at another level right now.
That's not a bad selection. You know, it's hard to argue with it. I mean, I think you could throw Taylor Youngman in the mix. You know, a guy who's
shut down
LSU in the College World Series finals a couple of years ago, and you know, and all he does is throw up 9-0s every week, it seems like.
he has been, you know, I'm glad you brought him up because Taylor Youngman has just been insane this year. He hasn't had a bad start. Yeah. Has he gone fewer than 8 innings at any of his starts?
No.
I mean, it's just, it's pretty amazing. I will read out from our Facebook and Twitter accounts. We don't necessarily have a question on Facebook, but Hughes McMurray on Facebook says, the USC Diamond Gamecocks should be number one after winning a series on the road at the consensus number one Florida Gators. That should vault them into the top spot, in my very, very biased opinion. So, Hughes, at least you're being honest. Appreciate that thought. Unfortunately for Hughes, he did not have a seat at this week's table in the rankings. And then, you know, Aaron, did you watch Sunday's Florida game, Florida-South Carolina game?
I did. Yes,
okay.
I did.
Well, Prospect Junkies asks, if Florida leaves Carson Whitson in for the sixth, do they win that game and remain number one?
I did think that Sully had a little bit of a quick trigger there with Whitson. I mean, he only thrown 70 or so pitches when he was pulled. He'd only given up two hits through five shutout innings. I thought he was in a nice little groove. I know he walked the leadoff guy in the sixth, but you know, I think Coach O'Sullivan was eager to get to his bullpen because it's such a weapon, and they hadn't used it at all on Saturday since they let Hudson Randall throw a complete game, his first of his career. But, you know, I mean, I think that's one of those situations where maybe the questioner is right. I mean, I think maybe if you go a little bit longer with Whitson, I mean, the guy's got great stuff. He's pitching well. I mean, he hit three pitches going. He looked really good. You know, they had a three-run lead. I say let him keep going. I mean, it pitch count wasn't an issue. Maybe there's something to that.
Yeah, I just saw that in the tracker. I didn't watch the game, but yeah, Whitson's been limited to five or six innings pretty much every time out this year. And you know, I don't know. College baseball's harder than high school baseball, but he was facing hotter bats last year in high school. So it's interesting. I still think when it's all said and done, Carson Whitson's going to have to pitch some really crucial innings for South Carolina, for Florida to win a national championship. But right now, he doesn't have to be their Friday guy. I mean, I know that they pitched their number one guy, it seems like, on Saturday now, but Hudson Randall is the undisputed ace. And frankly, Aaron, it looks like he's pitched his way into this discussion with Taylor Youngman. I think Sonny Gray would be in that mix. And then Trevor Bauer, if you need one guy to pitch a game right now, Hudson Randall's been insane.
Yeah, and, you know, let's throw Danny Holton out there too.
Oh,
there's tons of guys.
Oh, yeah.
It's a great year for pitching. You know, I mean, and there's lots of guys you could take in this discussion. But
still taking Bauer.
Yeah, certainly hard to. You can take Bauer. I think that's a fine choice. I guess I'll go with Taylor Youngman.
I want the intimidation of the pregame long toss where he's crossing paths with your pitcher throwing 120, and I want that running down the hill. I want that running down the mound, chucking in at 100 miles an hour from 52 feet throw. I want the I want him announcing his presence with authority. We'll end with a cliche. How's that?
There you go.
Well, if you have questions for the podcast for next week, you can always send those in for the rankings at podcast@baseballamerica.com. Or, of course, you can hit us up on Twitter at Aaron Fitt or at John Manuel BA. I suggest that Aaron Fitt because he knows more than I do. So for Aaron Fitt from the West Coast, I'm John Manuel from the World Headquarters here in Durham. We'll see you next week on the Baseball America College Podcast. Until then, so long, everybody.